the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's Friday, August 9th, 2019. Thanks so much for hopping on the show today. We have two NFL guests on, one of whom has been a regular contributor to the show, one of whom we have later on, Marcel Louis-Jacques, making his first appearance on the show. But someone who is not making their first appearance on the show is our first guest today to talk about the Patriots. It is the Boston Globe's Nora Princiati. Nora, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I am doing so well. And I know this isn't my first time on the show, but I think it's my first time in the beginning of the show. And I gotta say, to hear the opening music, it's a real rush.
By Boston band Save Ends, which is, I don't have music for every location, every writer who appears on the show, but just happens to be another Boston band. That is perhaps a coincidence, perhaps not a coincidence.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah, indeed. Nora, you are deserving of the primary slot here on the show. I feel like we're absolutely burying poor Marcel in the second segment now that we're like talking about this, like this is the main event. But, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to the Patriots. Always seems like there is news with the New England Patriots. And you happen to, I believe, break a story on the New England Patriots earlier this week, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you talking about Brady's house?
Yes. That's a story.
Okay. I feel like I've been given undue credit for that because, I don't know, anyone can look up Zillow. But, yeah, he and Giselle are selling their house in Brookline.
Okay, well, wait. Let's dig a little deeper here. Were you on Zillow specifically looking for Tom Brady's house, or were you just on Zillow, like, randomly and happened to come across this?
So somebody actually texted it to me.
Okay.
A friend who's a realtor was like, hey, this is Tom Brady's house. And I looked at it and I said, why, yes, that is Tom Brady's house. And, you know, the right architect, right interior designer, right date of construction and all that. And it is their giant mansion in Brookline mm-hmm. that they built from the ground up after going through great lengths to get the plot of land. And if you've got a spare $40 million or so, it can be yours.
It really is shocking to me. Now, let me contextualize this for people who don't live in the Massachusetts area. I myself lived in Brookline for about 5 years. And I will just say that I lived in a different part of Brookline from Tom Brady. I didn't realize I lived on the wrong side of the tracks until I actually recognized that Tom Brady lived on the right side of the tracks, which was the opposite side of the tracks from me. And I mean, there's a fancy Wegmans nearby. There's a really cool movie theater. I went to those places all the time. I never in my 5 years once saw Tom Brady or any member of the Brady family in Brookline.
So the one story that I've ever heard about people running into them in Chestnut Hill is that I had a friend who saw Giselle at SoulCycle a few years ago.
I mean, that checks
out.
And
the way it went down, yeah, right? The way it went down is that the class was about to start. I mean, maybe 30 seconds before the bikes are going to get going. And I don't know if you've been to SoulCycle, but it's pretty dark in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the door just opens up and there's this flood of light. And this just tall woman with beautiful hair steps through the doorway. And everyone gasps, but she just gets on the bike, does her SoulCycle class, and then leave. So no one really interacted. But that's my one Giselle in the Wild story. And I actually can't think of a single time that anyone's mentioned running into Brady just out and about. I don't know that he really does that.
It doesn't seem like he leaves the house when he's in Brookline. Now, you are, if I'm not mistaken, you're a regular SoulCycle attendee as well.
Yeah, SoulCycle is like having a whole
I'm aware
controversy right
that's
now.
That's not where I'm going with this, but I'm not trying to out you as a SoulCycle. But in the past,
yes, no, I enjoy SoulCycle. Shouts to Maddie and Johnny, my favorite instructors. Obviously, I have some things to work through, but in general, yes, I am a regular attendee at SoulCycle, and I'll be there at 10:30 tomorrow morning.
I'm not saying it trying to dox you. I'm not trying to like link you to possible SoulCycle issues. What I'm saying is, have you tried to take a SoulCycle class to possibly sort of time it appropriately to end up in the same class as Giselle, since you heard that story?
So, no,
okay.
Because it just feels too hard. And I don't normally go to the Chestnut Hill location. I am a Beacon Hill full cycle rider. However, it wouldn't be the weirdest thing, right? Because while it is not identical, my work schedule and Tom Brady's work schedule have some similarities. And if Giselle was perhaps trying to time her soul cycle attendance so that she could be home when Tom is home, there is a possibility, or well, no, I guess they would have to be going at different times. Yeah, so maybe Tom gets home with the kids and Giselle says, okay, I'm gonna go to soul cycle. Then maybe she could potentially be going as, say, I'm leaving Gillette Stadium for the day, having filed my stories, and then we wind up at Chestnut Hill Soul Cycle together. That seems possible. They have a lot of 4:30s. That might work, but I just think it's, you know, kind of a needle in a haystack there.
I mean, I don't want to say you should, but this may be an opportunity to get your Soul Cycle paid for. It becomes a business expense if you're trying to
hunt down
Giselle.
Soul Cycle to me is, Soul Cycle to me has to be separate, you know?
Okay.
That's my space. For me to be me. Okay, Bill?
And for Giselle to be Giselle. That's fair.
I got really triggered during this conversation.
Let's talk about the Patriots themselves, of the members of the Patriots roster. We'll move on from SoulCycle. In terms of the Brady situation, obviously, you know, Tom Brady could decide to sell his house, not sell his house. That's his prerogative. Brookline is, you know, it's not as if you can't get another house near Foxborough, which Brookline's not especially near Foxborough, but, you know, you can get more houses if you're Tom Brady. That's not the issue. But in the context of what happened right before this, which is that Tom Brady signed what was, you know, sort of billed at first as an extension, but is really just a one-year raise, which a contract that now voids at the end of the season and is not eligible for the franchise tag. I mean, do you think there's been any change in the broader relationship between Tom Brady and the Patriots, or about his, you know, his future timeline, or is it just maybe too much of reading into these two moves and really we should just be taking it, you know, sort of 1 year at a time like the Patriots seem to be?
Well, so I tend to believe that there are no accidents. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, Brady and Giselle listing the single piece of property that they own near where the Patriots play right around the time that he's getting this, I need another word other than extension because it is not an extension, but getting a pay bump this year and, you know, the sort of paper contract in the 2 years to come that will automatically void in March. They had to know how that was going to be perceived.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the one thing that I don't want to get lost in all of this is that Tom Brady and Giselle are legitimate house flippers. They buy and sell so much real estate. I do not understand why this is something that they love to do, because it seems like they put so much work into designing these houses and then they just sell them. Like, they've bought and sold a number of apartments in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the real estate market's good. It's something that they seem to like to do. So I don't think that it would be that crazy if they just, maybe they want to live in the city. Maybe they decided that they don't actually like the suburbs that much. It could be just something that they wanted to do and they timed it around the extension because they figured if they did it before, then that would cause extra hullabaloo.
Mm-hmm.
So he does the deal and then they put it on the market the day after. I guess that would make sense if he were saying, well, people are going to freak out about this no matter what. If we do it right after, maybe they'll freak out a little bit less is possible. But I think in general, I don't think anything has changed. It's more that I think things have kind of stayed how they always have been, which is that I think we're always sort of searching to a degree for, oh, well, now they've finally worked everything out, and this is the long-term plan between the Patriots and Tom Brady, and that's never really been how it is. And so I think they're just sort of figuring it out as they go, and there are different priorities on each side. So to pretend that there's not going to be any tension or potential disagreement as this goes forward, I think is a little naive. But it's not that they're at each other's throats. It's just that, you know, again, they have different priorities. Tom wants, you know, to play for a long time, and the Patriots and Bill Belichick don't want to change what they've done for all these years and commit themselves to a player, even if it's their franchise quarterback, longer than they necessarily have confidence that he's going to be, you know, really useful to them.
Mm-hmm. So do you see, it sounds like you might see Tom Brady and Giselle as like an upscale Chip and Joanna Gaines. Is that a fair way to picture them?
I would love that. I would love that. I tweeted at HGTV the other day and was like, you need to go to them.
If that's why he retired, if he was like, oh, I got a show on HGTV, that's what I wanted all this time, so I'm good now, I think that would be one of the great moments in NFL history.
It would be amazing, because I do think we haven't seen – one thing that I wish we saw in – I mean, Brady is a little bit on social media, but I just feel like we haven't had that many opportunities to see Tom and Giselle interacting.
Mm-hmm.
And if the two of them did – like a really upscale House Flippers. Oh, that would, there's nothing I want to watch on television more than I want to watch that specific show on television.
I think that would be really good. I'm not even being facetious. I think that would be great. But I don't see that happening, at least during the 2019, I should say, NFL season, especially given that Tom Brady apparently has such a dominant group of wide receivers. It felt like this was the, you know, it was the big question heading into the year, was what was Tom Brady going to do at receiver? And at least through week one of the preseason, I mean, we saw Jacoby Myers. Let's start with him. I mean, Jacoby Myers has been a hot name throughout this preseason, and he looked great yesterday.
Yeah, he did. He did a really good job, 2 touchdowns. I do want to, I mean, I don't want to feel like I'm throwing water on this. I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misunderstanding of what beat writers mean when we acknowledge good performances in preseason games and in training camp, because I've gotten a lot of feedback over the last couple of days where it seems like people are going in one of two directions, and it's either that Jacoby Myers is someday going to be in the Hall of Fame as an amazing Patriots receiver, and then the other thing is, well, it's preseason, it's training camp, it doesn't matter at all. And the answer is that it matters some, right? He played really, really well against mostly Lions backups, and he's done a great job so far. Does that mean that he is a viable, you know, number one or even number two NFL wide receiver? No, we don't have any evidence that indicates that, but I think he's on the inside track to make the team, certainly, and he's done everything that he needs to do so far. So, yeah, he seems like a fine for an undrafted guy, but I just want to pump the brakes a little bit after maybe – what's the opposite of pumping the brakes? Revving the engine?
Yeah, I guess that's what that is.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to be very clear that the engine that I am revving is the Jacoby Myers can make this roster engine. It's not the – Jacoby Myers is the answer to all of your, the Patriots don't have a good enough wide receiver core fears.
Okay, so just to clarify, you're speeding away from the Jacoby Myers is not going to make the team argument. You're slightly accelerating on the Jacoby Myers is going to make the team argument, but you are pumping the brakes on Jacoby Myers as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm pumping the brakes on that. I'm not fitting him for a gold jacket quite yet.
I just want to make sure.
Want to make sure I'm clear about that.
Yes. I mean, it seems like he has a sort of logical role on the team, especially given that, you know, the Patriots do use a lot of, you know, they do use a lot of slot passes. I mean, Julian Edelman is signed to a 2-year extension, but he's in his 30s. He has already had one, you know, PED suspension. If he was to get suspended again, they would have, I mean, Braxton Berrios in the slot. Do you think he's competing with Berrios for a roster spot, or is that, you know, do you think they could both make the roster possibly?
They could both make it. In particular, Berrios is valuable because he returns punts. But I think Myers is right now outplaying Berrios. Berrios has had a couple of pretty good practices, and he was good last night. But if you take the collective evidence that we have through a couple weeks of camp, the joint practices, the game last night, I would say that I would put Myers ahead of Berrios right now.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. And the other guy who has sort of been a standout early in camp has been Maurice Harris, who, what did Doug Kide say about Maurice Harris? Is he like the best hands he'd ever seen or something similar to that last night?
Did he? I missed that, but that's hysterical that Doug said that.
said something to the effect of,
he does have really good hands. Mm-hmm. He really does.
I'm going to search through.
Let's check the tape on this.
But in the meantime, I mean, do you think Maurice Harris is a slot locked up? I mean, do you think it's a question of just how big his role is going to be, or is he still sort of, you know, someone who is on the borderline there?
I think right now he's on the 53.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of my biggest question mark right now, just in terms of the usage among the wide receivers over the last few days, because he wasn't in their walkthrough on Wednesday. I guess it was Wednesday. I don't know what day it is. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in their walkthrough, which is sort of like, you know, good for you. You're a veteran. We don't need to see it. He played some, not a ton, but it's during the game. So it seems like they're kind of splitting it down the middle with him, where it mm-hmm. might be indicating that they feel like they've seen, you know, at least to a degree. We're still early in the preseason, but they've seen a lot from him and kind of know what they have.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's certainly battling with guys like Myers, who are getting a lot more reps. Mm-hmm. So I just have had a little bit of trouble over the last couple of days kind of reading the tea leaves as it pertains to him. But, you know, he had a touchdown. He does, I don't know if I would say that they're the best hands I've ever seen. He actually did end up dropping a couple passes last night. Mm-hmm. But I would call that an anomaly, because he does have very good hands. And he's a good player. I actually covered him very briefly in Washington, and I don't really understand why they let him go, because that's a team that could, you know, use a receiver with potential, and they let him walk. And I think the Patriots have a chance to, you know, have picked someone up for cheap who could develop into a good player. But in terms of his hierarchy right now, that's something I still feel like we're feeling out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. The exact quote from our friend Doug Hyde: Harris, quote unquote, has some of the best hands I've ever seen on a wide receiver.
So yeah, but Doug's like hedging there, right? Because he says some of the best hands I've ever seen.
I mean, he only has two, so you would figure it's at least one of them is one of the best hands.
Right, one of the hands. Or is it just pinkies, you know? Portions of his hands are the best hands he's ever seen.
Okay, so you know how like compared to, maybe you don't know this because you're a very young person, but compared to like 15 or 20 years ago, like the amount of work that goes into like covering camp and covering like the specifics of players is so much deeper than it was 20 years ago, and then 20 years before that, like it keeps advancing at a really stratospheric rate. I feel like 20 years from now, we're actually going to be concerned about like individual fingers on players' hands and like how good they are.
What's the word going to be for that? You know, like what's the weird scouting term?
He's got those plus fingers.
It's going to be like he's got. Well, people say sticky, but like I was going to say like sticky finger pads. You know,
it's going to be gross. Whatever it is what it boils down to.
I'm just picturing myself like talking to someone at the combine and just nodding as some regional scout is like, oh yeah, he's got sticky finger pads.
Just denying it to yourself. All right, we'll be back with Nora in a moment. But first, guys, they say a great offense starts with a great defense. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered with 4 levels of defense against gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction to help keep your engine running like new. And now, you and your car have even more reasons to celebrate with the Shell Great Gas Giveaway. It's your chance to win free fuel for a year or one of thousands of prizes with a total prize value of over $1 million. Pretty exciting stuff. And if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you'll automatically receive one entry every time you fill up with 8 gallons or more. And if you choose new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, well, you'll get 4 entries. And if you're not a member, download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com/win to join. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, no purchase necessary. Promotion ends September 1st, 2019, and see official rules at fuelrewards.com/win for how to enter by mail and all details. Back to the show. I will say, speaking of disgusting, Speaking of something as gross as sticky finger pads, let's talk about N'Keal Harry, the first round pick for the Patriots. And I don't know if this is permanent, Nora. I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping you have some insight into this, that they're planning something bigger. N'Keal Harry, the Patriots first round pick, wore number 8 yesterday as a professional, likely to make the team, NFL wide receiver. Do you think that should be banned?
Not in the preseason. See, I don't care about this at all. And it seems like everybody really does care about this, particularly, I think, because you had two number 8s out there for the Patriots on the field last night. One was Jamie Collins, and the other was, of course, N'Keal Harry. And so those are two players that people know, people pay attention to. You know, I don't think anyone really cared that Nick Brissett and Malik Gant were both wearing 42. But everybody seems to take note of the two 8s. And I don't understand why people care. I don't care at all. It'll change. They're not permanent.
But they're smart. They should know better than this. Like, N'Keal Harry, if you're a fan of N'Keal Harry, you can't buy his jersey now. You have to wait. Or you can get a number 8 jersey and be a weirdo and have people make fun of you at school for wearing a N'Keal Harry jersey that's not remotely going to be his actual jersey. I mean, like, it's not, like, neither of those guys are going to wear number 8. It's not like it's two quarterbacks where eventually one of them could plausibly wear the number 8. So, like, why did they pick that? Why not just pick a different number?
I think because they're just trying to make a point that you're not supposed to worry about your number right now. The funny thing is that it has the opposite effect, where because the Patriots do all this goofy stuff with the rookie numbers and mm-hmm. some of the other numbers, everybody starts talking about it and it becomes this whole big thing.
Right.
But it's not, I mean, it won't be permanent. Their point is just, I don't know. I think it's an annoying thing that they do. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think everyone would be totally fine, and it wouldn't go to their heads if everybody just had a normal number. I also think that some of their moms would appreciate it because they would be able to just buy their kids' jersey.
Right. Exactly. There was no one last night wearing number 89, and N'Keal Harry could have worn 89. Nobody would have complained. Nobody would have been like, ugh, 8 is gross. You should not be allowed to wear quarterback jerseys if you're a wide receiver or a linebacker. It's also gross that Jamie Collins said it. I didn't even notice that until you mentioned it.
It's really funny. It's actually, I think it weirded Matt Stafford out over the course of the week, because there was some quote he gave where he was like, yeah, number 8 out there. I mean, that's weird. And the way that he said it kind of came across as he was saying, like, oh, you know, what a great athlete, Jamie Collins. But I'm actually not 100% sure that's how he meant it. I think he might have been like, what? Like, why is that guy running around back there wearing number 8?
Yeah. Why is there a quarterback who is suddenly now playing linebacker or receiver or both? Maybe he thought it was the same guy. That would also be confusing.
That Bill Belichick. Always keeping everybody on their toes.
Always keeping everyone on their toes. And speaking of that, let's talk about special teams before we finish up. Let's talk about Jake Bailey, who they drafted out of the 5th round of Stanford. And then yesterday he punted, and he took kickoffs. And that seems strange. You don't normally have the same guy do both of those things. Occasionally you do, but the Patriots have Steven Gostkowski. They have Ryan Allen. Both those guys were pretty decent last year. I mean, how do you think this sort of ends up? Do you think Allen, his days are basically numbered and he's punting for a spot somewhere else? Or do you think Bailey has to do well in kickoffs to justify keeping him over Allen? Like what do you think, how do you think these sort of roster situation is going to end up breaking out when it comes to Gostkowski, Allen, and Bailey?
So I do think that Allen and Bailey are, you know, that is a roster battle mm-hmm. right now. And I have no sense that it is in any way settled. So, you know, we'll see how they do over the next few weeks. That said, and I know this is a little crazy, can't rule out all three making the team.
Really?
Bill Belichick loves special teams. And I can see a world, and this is not a unique thought. I'm not the only person who's brought this up, where, you know, they use Bailey when they want a really big leg.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Allen around for a little bit more of the, you know, touch punting situations where they can use just the way that he can really control where he wants the ball to end up. And then if Bailey can help on kickoff, you know, Steven Gostkowski's not getting any younger, and potentially that keeps him in better shape as the season goes on. And so I really think that there's a path where, and I know it sounds crazy, I just don't think you can rule out all three of those guys making the team. I would say if I had to pick one between the two punters right now, I would say that Bailey is a step ahead of Allen just because he has an enormous leg. Mm-hmm. You mean
in terms of his actual, like, punting ability, not that he has, like, a leg that's,
yes, twice as long as
the other leg. Okay.
Yes. That would be cool, though.
It'd be weird. I mean, I would feel concerned that he was going to get injured, but sure.
I'm going to be honest. When you started saying that, I thought you were going to ask me to clarify if I was saying just in terms of pure their punting performance versus factoring in the fact that he's also helping on kickoffs. And then I got where you were going with it. And was like, oh, yeah.
No, much, much dumber than that. I'm sorry.
No, his legs are normal size.
Okay, good.
I haven't been staring at Jake Bailey's legs.
I would never accuse you of that, Nora. You're a professional in every aspect of the word. I agree with you. Like, I could absolutely see Bill Belichick doing it. Not only see him doing this, but then other teams being like, oh, that's such a good idea. And then, like, copying him, and, like, next year 10 teams have two punters and a kicker, or two kickers and a punter. Like, it's not – like, what he does influences the league to start thinking like him.
And honestly, that might be the greatest benefit that they could derive of it, right? Like, get five competitors out there to basically waste a roster spot.
Oh, did you see the Ed Reed thing where during the Ed Reed, sort of like in the build up to the Ed Reed Hall of Fame stuff, where he was like, he said he played the wrong coverage for 10 weeks to bait Peyton Manning into making the wrong throw. Do you think that's what Belichick could be doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if the Jets have like six punters next year, we'll know it worked out.
Well, you know who would do it is the Lions.
Oh,
the Lions would just have like an all punter team.
Oh, good. Actually, I have one Lions question for you, and then we're going to finish up. Did you see how Matt Patricia was coaching last night?
Okay, yeah, I did. So Matt Patricia has some sort of lower leg injury.
Yes.
And he was rolling around driving like an ATV on the practice field during the joint practices, but he can't have that on the sideline because it's too big. So at first, because we're all watching to see, like, how's he going to deal with this? And at first, he comes out on the field, and he's just sort of, like, on one of those little scooters where you can have your knee bent and it's on a little thing, and, like, he's pushing it with his good leg. But then during the game, I look down, and I see Matt Patricia just perched on the table where they keep the Gatorade coolers, and he was, like, holding himself up sort of on the coolers is what it looked like. And, you know, granted, the press box was pretty high up, but I got binoculars, and I'm looking down there and going, is Matt Patricia coaching from on top of the water coolers right now? And I think he was.
That's where he was. I can't fathom that Matt Patricia spent like an hour or 2 hours of his life thinking, well, I have this condition. Where should I coach from? I got to be on the field still. It's the preseason. I got to, you know, pay attention to my guys. But, the Gatorade area, that's definitely the safest spot for me. No one ever runs over the Gatorade coolers. And there definitely wouldn't be any repercussions if someone happened to do that. I wouldn't look dumb in the slightest, but that's where I'm going to go. That seems to be the most logical place for me. Not in the press box because it's the preseason, but no, actually hiding sort of vaguely above or behind the Gatorade section.
Where would you want to coach from?
Okay, if I had the same injury?
Did not have the use of one of your legs.
I would go to the press box where it's air conditioned. And I guess it was the dome, so it's not that bad. But, like, I would go there. I can maybe have some snacks. I don't have to worry about being run over with my bum leg. I think I would, especially for the preseason, I would grin and bear it for a couple of weeks and just maybe go upstairs. Maybe even might be a positive thing, try something different. But I don't know. Would you have also gone in the Gatorade section?
You know, I think probably ultimately I would have gone the same route that you're suggesting, give an assistant the opportunity to kind of take the reins and try out a role that they wouldn't necessarily be able to have during the regular season. Cause you know, I like to develop young leaders like that as a head coach. However, Matty P was really enjoying riding the ATV around at practice. And I've got to say, I don't blame him one bit. It looked really fun. He looked like he was having fun. And then the other thing is that Martha Ford, the Lions owner, when she comes out to practice, she has a custom golf cart that looks like a blue Mustang. And that baby is sweet. So I'm pretty jealous of both of them. So you're not going to get anything from me disparaging the choices of anyone who wants to scoot around in a semi-motorized vehicle. I was pretty jealous.
Okay, so that's exactly the solution here. Why didn't he coach from an ATV on the sidelines?
I don't think he was allowed to. I think it was too big because that's what he was doing during practice. And again, he was on top of the world. He didn't even, there was one day when he didn't get out of it to be interviewed. So there's like 15 Detroit reporters all gathered around Matt Patricia's ATV, and Matt Patricia's head is just like towering above them because he's sort of standing up and he's already elevated because he's riding on it. It was fantastic. And you could tell that, you know, the conceit was kind of, oh, I'm right here. Why don't you guys come over here? But it was totally like, you're loving this, and I would be loving it too.
Talk about the no fun league, and it's not okay to have an ATV on the sidelines when the owners of that team are the Ford Motor Company. I find this incredibly frustrating. But Nora, you did a great job in the first segment of the show. You'll be welcome back with first guest status in the future, ATV or no ATV. But until then, where can people check out your work?
In the Boston Globe, bostonglobe.com, and I usually tweet out my stuff. My Twitter is just my name, Nora Pizziotti. Yeah, that's kind of it.
Isn't it boston.com? Is that changed?
Boston.com is, like, related to the Boston Globe, but I technically, some of my stuff goes on both platforms, but no, the Globe website is bostonglobe.com.
I guess I should trust you for knowing the website of the,
or make it
the
Globe.com.
Where you work. I don't want to send people to globe.com. That could be anything. We don't know.
Okay. Well, the best way to do it is just to go to my Twitter page. I tweet out all of my stories, and they will link you back to the Boston Globe's illustrious website.
Very smart. Well, Nora, thank you so much. Marcel Louis-Jacques after the break here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. A new guest now on the show, someone who is new to ESPN, our new Bills reporter, Marcel Louis-Jacques. Marcel, how are you?
I'm excellent, man. You know, football is officially back, so
yes.
That means life is just infinitely better.
Life's infinitely better. And as someone who was at yesterday's 24-16 Bills win over the Colts, what did you think about Sean McDermott icing the backup Colts kicker to end the first half?
Yeah,
I
tweeted something out that, you know, it's hard to find the words to describe how hilarious that was. And, you know, got some mixed reaction. But for the most part, I think it's hilarious. Like, on one hand, I get practicing game situations and doing things during the preseason to set habits during the regular season. I get that. But, I mean, this isn't – icing the kicker is not, you know, like a – it's not a flea flicker. It's not an RPO. It's not something where you need like a certain very specific type of personnel in there. You're still throwing your field goal unit in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a mental practice than anything. And it's just – even 12 hours later, I'm struggling to find the words. But the closest I can get is like it is a hilariously – I guess the word is merciless attachment to that philosophy that I'm going to do what I would do in a regular season. Never mind that this is the backup to a Hall of Fame kicker. Yes. Never mind that this is, you know, first half of the preseason, first half of the first preseason game. You know what? They're welcome to Buffalo. You know, there's no mercy here. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have to think about every single kick you take here. And so, yeah, I don't mean it hilarious. Like I'm scoffing at the decision. It's just, you know, I kind of love the move, but I can't say, you know, I'm a big fan of this move. That's a fan is kind of a taboo word in this industry.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, look at, you know, poor Cole Hedlund, this backup kicker, like you said, for the Colts. Adam Vinatieri's making the team. It's not like he is going to, you know, boot Adam Vinatieri off the team. So really, he's kicking really for 31 other teams, most likely, in this scenario, and he gets iced before his big preseason kick. This poor guy. Like, he made it. So good for him.
He did. And I think, ironically, it's going to help him out because it's showing some mental fortitude. So maybe he was doing the kid a favor. Maybe he's doing the guy a favor. I don't want to call him the kid.
He's giving him a regular season rep as well.
It's just like, you know, a lot of people had hopped in my mention saying, like, he needs to practice personnel and formation and blah, blah, blah. No, they do not. Like, I've seen practice. They definitely practice their field goal formation, their field goal team, their special teams units. That's not what this is about. This is mental. This is a mental practice for Sean, and it was a test for the Colts kicker. But like I said, it's just it is funny. It was like a, you know, like I said, welcome to Buffalo. You're gonna have to earn, you gotta earn everything you get here.
Yeah, the AFC East is serious business. I mean, you look at Adam Gase taking smelling salts before the Jets game yesterday. It's coaches are ready.
That was super weird, man. Especially like that coming out. I don't actually know when the story came out, but I just saw the screenshot that day of him like leaving the hospital after his wife's C-section to go watch film with Peyton Manning or something like that.
Yes,
like just a really, I don't know, really intriguing dude. So AFC, and then of course Belichick's in there.
Yes,
he's his own animal.
Right. I mean, Belichick's not willing to admit who's calling plays on defense. It's just a real wild division of coaches. But in terms of the game itself, I mean, for me, the most exciting moment watching it back this morning was Christian Wade's 65-yard touchdown run. And we talk about this Bills running back depth chart a lot. Christian Wade has not really come up very frequently. So I feel like it's a really fascinating story. Can you sort of detail where Christian Wade has come from and sort of what his situation is for the Bills right now?
So, yeah, the gist of it is he's part of the NFL's program that allows international players a spot on the league's rosters. It's a practice squad spot, but, you know, it opens the door and gives them an opportunity that would otherwise be incredibly difficult. And Christian is, I mean, he obviously starts out bottom of this running back chart, and but he's got the natural athletic ability as a rugby player, and you saw that yesterday. The concept is the same. You know, you see space, run to that space, and keep going. And that's exactly what you saw yesterday. Some of it was not so technically sound. Kind of almost botched the handoff. And but the rest is, like you said, it's raw and it's natural. And it was, most importantly, it was a memorable moment in a game where a couple guys ahead of him either weren't memorable or were memorable for the wrong reason. You saw TJ Yeldon, who's already, you know, he, after these 2 weeks of training camp, he's kind of fighting for a spot on the team, regardless of the contract he signed this offseason. And you saw him fumble near the red zone. I think it was the Colts 28-29 yard line. And you saw Snorris Perry, who did get that touchdown, but it took him 3-4 attempts to get 3 yards. And some of that is offensive line push. I'm sure they'll watch the film and determine whether or not that's the case. But even still, that's not jumping out on paper. And when you see this guy, okay, we gave him one touch and he took it to the house. Like that's I think that's going to stay in their head, especially as we go on in this preseason. It's not like LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore are going to get a ton of reps during games. I think they're going to get to a point where even Devin Singletary, he's going to carve out enough of a role for himself in the regular season that they'd want to limit his workload during the preseason. And so it opens up the door for Christian to get a lot more opportunity during these next 3-4 games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you just kind of, you love to see it too with him. Right. You don't ever want to say you're rooting for anybody that you cover because, you know, objectivity and professionalism and whatnot, but mm-hmm. he's a funny dude. He seems like a genuinely good person from the interactions that we've had with him. He's thoughtful in his interviews, and you kind of like seeing people succeed. You like seeing those kind of underdog stories happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And just in terms of this running back situation on the whole, I mean, the conversations that we've seen publicly from the Bills organization, from LeSean McCoy, it basically said, hey, he's the guy, I'm the guy, you know, I'm going to be the primary back here. But the moves they made, I mean, this offseason, signing Frank Gore, signing TJ Yeldon, drafting Devin Singletary in the third round, seemed to suggest more of a, you know, a committee or at least some sort of transition plan for moving on from LeSean McCoy. I mean, where do you see this sort of at the moment in terms of the Bills depth chart and in terms of the sort of usage rates? And then how do you think it might change as the season goes on?
Well, like everybody said up to this point, it is LeSean McCoy is going to be the first one to get the ball here. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to, if you kind of read between the lines here, what they're saying, Sean McDermott came out and told us, you know, they reevaluated, they self-scouted this past year, and it's hard to put all of McCoy's production on one guy. Basically saying, you know, it wasn't his fault. You know, there's some poor offensive line play also contributed to his career low year. And, what they said by adding so many offensive linemen through free agency and by mm-hmm. sticking by a guy who, if they cut him, you know, they're not any worse for the wear. I think maybe $2 million in dead cap, $2.5 million.
Right.
It's a drop in the bucket for the last year of his contract. So if they didn't think that the moves they made would still open the door for him to be productive and that he still didn't have that in the tank, then he would be gone mm-hmm. already. They don't. This is the NFL. People get cut all the time when you can't play anymore. So I think they still believe in LeSean, but they're also cognizant that, you know, while not all of last season was his fault, mm-hmm. a portion of it was.
Sure,
he's not the, you know, 1,600-1,700 scrimmage yard guy that he used to be anymore. They need help for him. They want to limit his carry so that he doesn't just completely wear down over the course of the season. And that's where Frank Gore comes in as a between the tackles guy. With Devin Singletary, how they're using him in almost a Darren Sproles type role, they're just moving him all over the field. They're going to mm-hmm. give the kid carries. They're going to send him in motion. They're going to give him swing passes, short routes. They're using him as like this Swiss Army knife so that, once again, LeSean McCoy doesn't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Makes
and
sense.
So it is McCoy might be the first one to touch the ball in the backfield, first one on the field, but there's nothing they've done in training camp to say this is not a running back by committee. I think it's absolutely a committee type of approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes the most sense. The one thing I would wonder, and, you know, who knows if that's going to actually turn out this way, but I wonder if they think there might be a trade market for McCoy in season, just given that this is a team that did trade Marcell Dareus a couple of years ago when they you know, were sort of frustrated with him and he had a high cap number. When they saw an opportunity to trade him, they took their shot and went for it. And with McCoy, I mean, if you get Devin Singletary playing well to start the year, Frank Gore looks like, you know, the ageless wonder that he is. I wonder if they do, you know, sort of explore a trade opportunity for McCoy in midseason if a team like the Chiefs, for example, are struggling at running back.
So, and that's what makes things interesting, though, because I think that does make sense. That does make sense in theory, but it's already kind of tricky to trade a running back, mm-hmm. especially one with a lot of miles on his odometer.
Sure.
But the thing is, if LeSean McCoy is productive, I don't see a whole lot of scenarios in which he's a productive runner and the Bills are still a bad team.
Mm-hmm.
If he's playing well, if he's running well, and that run game can complement and open things up for the passing game like it's want to do, that means the Bills are probably going to be in a position to make the playoffs, which would mean they're trading a productive player in the middle of a playoff run. And I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't think that's I don't think that that's something. I don't think that's something Brandon Bean would do. Now, if he's productive and the team is bad, or the team is just outright bad and they think they can get some capital for him, then I think they'll do it. But I wouldn't, if I'm a Bills fan, I probably wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that to happen. And he did come out and say the other day that, you know, two teams had tried to trade for him in the past, and he's still, you know, he's still in Buffalo. But I don't know how seriously, I don't even know how seriously I take those comments, because I mean, I can call up and ask Bill Gates for $100 million. That means I tried to get $100 million. Doesn't mean he's interested in giving it to me.
That's fair.
So yeah, you got to take that with a grain of salt. But no, I'd expect LeSean McCoy to play his season in Buffalo.
All right, I'll be back with Marcel in a moment. Talk more about the Bills. But first, guys, let's talk about MeUndies. MeUndies is here to change your underwear. Not literally, but it's here to change the way you think about it. They believe undies shouldn't take themselves too seriously, and that undies should be soft, fit every booty like it was made for every booty, and offer fun patterns that give you the freedom to express yourself. And guys, if you are a listener to my show in the past, if you're someone who shows up at my house, if you check out my underwear drawer, it is full of MeUndies. I just moved in with my partner. I'm very excited about that. And if you go to her drawer, you will find the same thing. It is full of MeUndies because, as someone who lived with me, she was stuck hearing me proselytize for MeUndies all the time, gave it a shot, and found out that it is incredibly comfortable underwear. And good for her, good for anyone listening who was interested. MeUndies also believes that every woman should have the freedom to wear whatever cut they want, in whatever color they want, and whatever size they want, which is why you should check out the new Feel Free line if that is something that you are interested in partaking in. And if you are, regardless of your gender, regardless of how you identify, MeUndies has a flexible membership that offers styles for men, women, matching your boo, and even your dog. Pretty exciting stuff. They don't just have undies, they have super soft and comfy onesies and loungewear, perfect for lounging. Their lounge pants are incredible. Even if you are set with underwear, which again, I would strongly urge you otherwise, their lounge pants are life-changing. Strongly, strongly recommended from me personally. And MeUndies is a great offer for my listeners right now. For any first-time purchasers, if you haven't bought MeUndies yet, you get 15% off and free shipping. It's a no-brainer because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So there's nothing to lose. Give it a shot. I feel incredibly confident you will like it. If you don't, you can just send it back. Get 100% satisfaction guarantee. So to get that 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, like I just mentioned, go to MeUndies.com/Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's MeUndies.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. So obviously, you mentioned the possible playoff push there. It's going to take a step forward from Josh Allen, the Bills quarterback. And yesterday, I mean, he did not play very much. What we saw was, you know, fine. I think it was extraordinary in one way or another. 6 of 11 for 66 yards. Nice throw here or there, an 8-yard run. And obviously, you know, it's going to come down to what he does during the season with the first-team offensive line, which wasn't even in one piece yesterday, and his weapons as well. So in terms of Josh Allen's performance yesterday, and then in terms of the bigger picture, where we had Sean McDermott come out and say, you know, all I care about really is that Josh Allen throws the ball accurately. You know, what do you think of his performance yesterday in that sort of small sample? And in the big picture, what do you think Josh Allen has to hit this year? If there's a marker, whether it's a completion percentage mark, whether it's a level of accuracy, whether it's just a certain level of comfort, is there some sort of, you know, marker you think he has to hit for Bills, for the Bills organization to be happy with him and his progression in year two?
I don't know if there's a hard number that they've got in mind. And going back to kind of LeSean McCoy, he even said during his media scrum that once you start planning on numbers, once you start looking at numbers, that's when it's, you know, you fall short. That's usually when you fall short. So I think yesterday showed kind of a glimpse of what Buffalo would like him to do with the ball. 11 attempts, and I counted 4 passes downfield. And one of them was probably I think he forced it a little bit to Rob Foster. I believe it was. But mostly the receivers that they added, the John Brown and Cole Beasley, they're guys who specialize in separating quickly. Beasley especially, he's a within 5-10 yards of the line of scrimmage kind of guy. He is a built-in check down. Mm-hmm. And you saw him target Beasley a few times. You saw him target John Brown a couple times as well. And that's what they want to see. They don't need – we all know how strong Josh Allen's arm is. I think they see that as like a luxury. I don't think they see that as we need him to be chucking the ball downfield to win games. Like this, it's not like Al Davis's Raiders. And they see that as, hey, this is a weapon that we can use situationally. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we just need you to take care of the ball.
Right.
The defense is going to be good enough to keep them in and maybe even win games that – perhaps they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, but they're not going to win those games if Allen's turning the ball over, if he's taking too many shots downfield, if he's not being efficient with his time on the field and making that defense, you know, rotate in and out frequently. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't need to be the hero, but I would expect they just want him, even if he completed, you know, 55, 60%, of his passes. I think he's at 52, 53 last year. Mm-hmm. As long as those interception rates are low, as long as his turnover rate is low, I don't think they're going to be that upset.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, to Josh Allen's credit, I mean, or sort of not to his credit, might be the wrong word, but just in terms of, you know, sort of looking at that completion percentage, this is a guy who threw, you know, deep more frequently than anybody else in football by a pretty comfortable margin in terms of what they were asking from him in this offense. So, I mean, you know, you look at his numbers, and the numbers aren't definitely going to tell you everything, but, you know, in terms of what they need him to be, if he does throw deep that frequently, and it seems like you said, the plan is not to throw deep that frequently, you know, his completion percentage doesn't have to be 60% or 65% for him to succeed. If he can run as well as he ran last year and complete 57, 58% of his passes, if he's throwing downfield, maybe not as much as he did a year ago, but if he still ranks among the league leaders, that could be a pretty valuable player. So I think it's really difficult in a way to judge him because he can be so unique, and you know, he might not work out. I still think it's very way too early to say, but I do think that we're at the point now where you know, he has fewer excuses maybe than he did last year, where it was the bad offensive line, where it was the subpar receiving core. I think there's certainly weapons and talent around him now in a way that maybe there wasn't last year.
I agree. I think last year he might have fallen back into the same mindset. And it's hard to say falling back. He just kind of continued the same mindset he had at mm-hmm. Wyoming, where it was really just him. And he was the guy. He needed to go win games. Like, they're living and dying on his right arm. But in the NFL, you don't necessarily need to do that. I think what they're saying is we can give you help. You just need to get them the ball. Like, you don't need to hit the home run. You don't have to be the hero mm-hmm. anymore. You just need to not give that ball up.
Right.
You need to make smart decisions. And everything Allen has done in training camp and what he's said to the media reflects that he is suggests that he's taken that to heart, and I think that's a positive sign for the Bills.
Yeah, for sure. The guy who seemed to stand out last year during the kind of last few games of the year, where Allen did play much better than he had, it felt like, earlier in the year, was Robert Foster, who was really the breakout receiver for the Bills in the final few games of 2018. And then this year, heading into camp, of course, they signed those players. They brought back Zay Jones. They signed Brown. They signed Beasley. You figure he's going to be competing for a role, and he's been really with the number twos. He played about half the snaps with the Colts, which is not what you expect for a guy who's, you know, expected to play a starting role. And he had one catch on four targets for 14 yards. He had a play where he had a near completion on a 38-yard pass where he improvised and ran upfield and made it almost a spectacular catch but wasn't able to bring it in. What's happened with Robert Foster to make the organization sort of sour on him? Do you think it's just that the competition got better, or is there something specific or something, you know, behind the scenes that sort of has led the organization to sort of treat him as a backup as opposed to someone who might be, you know, part of their core going forward?
I think yesterday was kind of reflective of what he's done in camp so far. Every now and then he will, you know, he will show that vertical ability. He will, he will flash that talent. It's just he hasn't stood out mm-hmm. so much. And I do think part of it is the added competition. Mm-hmm. I think that putting, you know, if they rolled out the same receiving corps as last season, then maybe he's getting more opportunities. But adding Beasley, adding Brown to the roles that they're assigned, mm-hmm. put Foster in more of a situational, in a situational role where, you know, you have a specific skill set and we're going to use that as we see fit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a process. I don't want to say he hasn't adapted, but I think he is still adapting to this new style of play where they're not just chucking the ball downfield, mm-hmm. you know, every five passes. I think that was Allen's rate in 2018. So it's a guy, he's got all the physical tools there, and you see the effort plays, that diving catch with Tyree Jackson. But he hasn't shown enough in camp to surpass Zay Jones or even Andre Roberts, who's just really shot up the depth chart over the past couple weeks. But I don't know if I'd say that they have necessarily soured on him. He does still, in training camp, he did still work with the first team. He did still rotate into the first team frequently. It kind of seems like they want to give him these opportunities. It's just, is he going to take advantage of them?
I mean, Andre Roberts is someone who, you know, you figure for special teams value alone is going to have a roster spot every week. So it's going to be, it seems like, you know, he's competing with Zay Jones, he's competing with John Brown, he's competing with Cole Beasley. You know, those guys are going to make the team, but I guess it's really just, you know, is he going to make it as the third or fourth guy on this wide receiving core? And it's, you know, the talent's certainly there. I think we saw that last year. We saw what his upside was and what he was capable of doing, but it does seem like they're challenging him to sort of, you know, like you said, get into that process a little further. As we finish up here, on the defensive side of the ball, anybody who stood out to you in week one of the preseason who you know, think Bills fans or fans of the league as a whole should keep an eye on throughout the remainder of the preseason?
I think Corey Thompson, who's filling in place of Lorenzo Alexander at strong side linebacker. I think he really stood out. He was all over the field. He was making plays. He's not in line to take Lorenzo's spot,
right,
but he is somebody that he's a depth piece that the Bills are excited about. I think he adds some legitimacy to the team's depth at linebacker. Mm-hmm. Daryl Johnson, also the rookie, really, really stood out to me yesterday. And he's a guy, he's 6'6", and I've seen him bat a few passes down in camp, and that translated onto the field yesterday when you saw him with the pass deflection at the line of scrimmage. You saw him record a sack as well. It's a guy who, you know, the best pass rushers in the league have rotation of guys. It's not just one or two guys,
absolutely,
you know, going in there for 70 plays a game. You've got to be able to rotate people in and out without a high drop in effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And I think him behind guys like Shep Lawson, Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, I think that would do wonders for the Bills if they try to revamp this pass rush next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Marcel, I mean, it's a pleasure to have you on. Definitely have you on to talk about the Bills more during this upcoming season. But people want to check you out now that you are here at ESPN. Where can they check out your work and your social media and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter fairly frequently at @Marcel_LJ. Catalog of my work can be found on the Buffalo Bills team page at ESPN.com. You go to ESPN, click on the NFL tab. List of teams is going to pop up. Click on the Bills. You'll be able to see everything that I've written thus far and everything I write in the future. Mm-hmm. And that's still really, really cool to say deep down as, you know, I'm still getting used to working for ESPN. And I think my headshot just got up on the website last night. And I mean, that was something, you know, I like to enjoy the moment. Mm-hmm. And that was something I definitely, it wasn't lost on me.
I can't fault you for that. Absolutely, I cannot fault you for that. But it's a pleasure to have you on, and I'll have you back on during the season. Thanks so much.
I can't wait, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks so much to my guests today, Marcel Louis-Jacques and Nord Princiati. We have more audio coming next week. Our annual Player Props podcast is on the way. We're going to invent a bunch of player props with my pal Chris Sproul of ESPN. So always excited about that one. We'll get some weird props in there and more audio coming next week.